can. So yeah, we definitely have to give a shout out to listeners like at Bender2252 on YouTube and at Collecting the 90s on Instagram. Great positive feedback about season one, episode 8, which published not too long ago as we are recording this season one, episode 11 recap. I'm losing track of all the episodes here. And, you know, what I'm noticing, Andrew, is that there seems to be growing listener demand for, like, us to recap the original pre-Urkel cold opens. So I feel like at the end of season one, we might have to like do an episode just specifically around that topic.
Yes, we should do just an episode of cold opens. Ooh, we can call it the cold open recap. Oh no, we can call it the cold brew recap.
I would love that. Yeah. Yeah, you're making me think about a nice cold beer in the hot sun, even though I hate beer, but a nice cold beverage nonetheless. I'm all for that. We should keep that in mind. So thank you to people like at Toy Aliens on YouTube and at Judy Winslow Matters on Instagram for suggesting that.
Yes, thank you for suggesting. Thank you to Judy Winslow or at Judy Winslow Matters. You sent me something about the fish I have been captivated by forever.
Yeah, like she sent us a DM at Family Matters Rewatch Pod, an eBay link of, I guess, an original copy of the season one, episode 8 script. And apparently there was some dialogue that later got cut that involved Judy and the fish you were mentioning, right? Because I think you had said Judy was having some kind of thing going on with a fish.
Yes, in that episode, she moves this fishbowl from one table to a different table in the kitchen. And it's very clunky. It has no context, but they specifically pan out on the camera so you can see her doing this. And I have always wondered why. And this fishbowl that I assumed had never been in an episode has been in the show since episode 2 in the same spot in the kitchen with a live fish in it.
And apparently the fish is named Francis. So my guess is that like they were pressed for time, the editors, writers, producers, and they just cut a significant chunk of whatever dialogue was about Francis. But there was still a little itty bit that had to be left to maybe satisfy the 22-minute time frame that sitcoms usually have to have. So I don't know. That's my guess. But at Judy Winslow Matters on Instagram, as always, you know, thank you for the heads up. Passionate fans, they will do deep dives that you would never expect.
I love this. I want more. I am hungry for more. So I'm loving seeing everybody just excited, finding all these little things and these little gems and people talking about their memories of Family Matters. It really just is making this even more fun.
I totally agree. And actually, Winslow Matters, she also commented about our, I think it was Mr. Batarang, that same episode where we were like, how the fuck is Mother Winslow's room upstairs when we see her bathroom connected to her room downstairs? And this is what actually Winslow Matters explained to us. Mother Winslow's bedroom is actually off the living room on the first floor. In episode 2, you see her walking back towards the hallway to it. There's a door on the left, that's her room, and to the right is the bathroom Carl installed the shower in. Okay, so I was reading that and I was like, all right, that kind of solves it for episode 2, but why, I don't know if that still explains like why she goes upstairs in episode 8 where it's implied that her room is. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Your thoughts?
I'm still trying to figure it out because she goes upstairs, but then when she finished her shower in the beginning of the episode, she comes from upstairs. So I'm just like, and then that makes me wonder, Eddie's room, was Eddie on the first floor? Did the family really trust Eddie that much to have him on the first floor for his bedroom? I don't think so.
No, because I mean, this guy wants to go out at fucking 2 a.m. to watch Rambo. Of course, they're not going to trust him for a first floor room. He has to be like, there was a reason that he was up in the attic in the pilot. Like, oh, hey, let's like lock you up in there like an orphaned, undeserved child because we want to keep you disciplined, Eddie boy.
I can see that. You know, I was just listening to the Annie soundtrack earlier today. So it's funny that you mentioned orphan in an attic. Jeez.
I can read your mind, Andrew. I can read your mind. Now, I think we had mentioned that, at least I, and hopefully you as well, will be making an appearance at 90sCon in March. We're hopefully, fingers crossed, trying to get a nice podcast t-shirt created, either something that kind of plays off of the catchphrases that we've been developing, the Shadow Judy and the Way to Go Carl from Mama Winslow. I think you said you were talking to a doctor about QR codes that we could get on our t-shirts to direct people to the podcast. How's that going?
Yep, I sent off for our QR code earlier later this week. So by the time I get back from Mexico, that'll be ready to go. And I'm going to go through an online t-shirt company that I found that prints original designs for us to print the shirts. And they'll be here well before 90s Con.
Lovely. So if you're listening, you're going to be at 90s Con, hopefully Saturday, March 16th, Hartford, Connecticut, the Connecticut Convention Center, my hometown, my home state. We'll see you there. I'll be there. Andrew will hopefully be there. And we'll have a good time reminiscing.
Yes, I'm super excited. I want to see everybody in 90s colors, blocked out things, ugly sweaters. I want to see all of it.
Absolutely. I know the Boy Meets World cast members who do the Pod Meets World podcast, they'll be there. And as a follow-up, I heard that they're going to also be at the Bushnell Performing Arts Center in Hartford literally the next day, Sunday the 17th. So I'm trying to figure out, oh my gosh, should I stay in Connecticut for a little while longer over the weekend? Because, you know, they're just going around my hometown. And Will Friedle, who played Eric from Boy Meets World, he's from Hartford. He grew up in Connecticut as well. Yeah, just like me. So I don't know. I don't know if I want to spend my money and my time more. I'm trying to figure it out.
Possibly. I mean, we might have to go bar hopping. We might catch them out at a bar.
I don't think I've ever went bar hopping in Hartford. It's weird. I mean, I've grown up around that area my whole life up until like 25. And then, yeah, I think I've done all of my adult bar hopping in like other states. So that'll be interesting. Hartford bar hopping. We definitely do have to do that sometime.
We have to. I'm planning on at least staying the night. I don't want to come right back to Rochester. And I was like, ooh, let me look up some drag shows, see what's happening in Connecticut.
Oh, drag shows in Connecticut, in Hartford, that would be a new thing. I would definitely love to see that if that's a thing.
Okay, I'm going to see what I can find.
Hey, welcome to the Delicious Recap, our weekly rewatch of the 90s sitcom Family Matters. I am John Francois, and who are you, sir?
Today, I am the girl with nothing.
Yes. I had to take a moment, but I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, that was a great Eddie joke. That was a great Eddie joke. Okay. But otherwise, yes. You are usually known as...
AJ Vandertunt, or you can also call me Andrew. Both names suffice because I enjoy them both. But Vandertunt is just a little fun stamp on the end of it.
I love that Eddie joke. I love that you are that Eddie joke. That is a great... Woo! All right, let's get into it. Season 1, Episode 11, The Quilt, original air date, my mom's 23rd birthday, December 8th, 1989, written by David Scott Richardson, directed by Peter Baldwin, his second episode in a row. Our guest star actually won this time, Anne Ryerson as Brooke Nash. Andrew, I don't know if you know, she actually is known for roles in Friday the 13th part. What's VI in Roman numeral? How does that translate to English?
Six.
Okay. Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives from 1986. She also appeared in Caddyshack in 1980, Minority Report in 2002. Mm-hmm. But right now, in December of 89, Anne Ryerson appears as Brooke Nash, the woman who is very interested in Mama Winslow's very valuable quilt.
She is. And, you know, I've seen her in every single thing she's been in. And then when I saw her in this episode, I was like, oh, my God. Immediately, I thought of Minority Report because it's a great movie.
I feel like I've seen her before, but all throughout, all I could just think of was like, wow, here's a perfectly thin white lady that just seems like something out of Google Images. So I'll need to like dive into her filmography to figure out where I might have seen her. Our Hulu synopsis. Laura has a garage sale and mistakenly sells Mother Winslow's priceless 200-year-old quilt. Andrew, what did you think of the episode?
So this episode, I hinted at this last episode. It kind of makes me sad. This is a little bit of a hard episode for me to watch. It's a good episode, but I can tell you I only laughed one time this entire episode. There was no other laughs for me rewatching it, even when I originally saw it as a kid. It was just so icky with emotion for me. It was a hard one for me to watch, but it was still good.
Okay. So, is it tied to any real life experiences of yours, or it just so happens to be, again, like a similar-ish Fresh Prince Will meets his biological dad who abandons him moment?
In the original airing of it, it was kind of the Fresh Prince Will thing where it's like, ooh, these are some really hard emotions they're talking about in this episode, but they're trying to keep it light and friendly. Rewatching it now as an adult, it actually reminds me of some situations that I've experienced of something happening to somebody else's property that you didn't mean to happen to, but then also something that's happening in the news right now with museums and historical facts. kind of happening in this episode. And so it struck a chord with me on that this time around.
Okay. I'm very curious about that. As we get into it, yeah, you'll definitely have to follow up on the museum historical fact of it. I thought it was another fantastic episode for Mama Winslow. Definitely for Rosetta as an actress, between this one and Stakeout, great range. Because if you think about it, Stakeout was just comedy. Like, she was just blasting us with all these funny lines, facial expressions, the karate moves. And then we got to see Rosetta's dramatic range in this episode. This was like the polar opposite. So I loved it. I mean, we got to see layers of Mama Winslow here. That was awesome. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Is it the first episode where Laura is a focal point? Because I think up until now, we haven't really seen her become a center of an episode as she was in this one.
This is Laura's first focal point episode. This is the first episode specifically focused on her.
And look, it's good to see her get some shine. To your point about how this episode was so icky with emotion, I do feel like toward the end, Laura was really great with emotional manipulation. I did feel like all of a sudden we went from a sitcom with heart to like this weird soap opera. So when we get to that moment, I'll let you know. Kind of interesting to see Carl take a sort of supporting backseat, because I think, again, up until this point, he's been a pretty good center of all the episodes.
Yeah, he's had, I would say, the most lines out of anybody in any episode. And it was nice to kind of see him take a back seat, especially at the end, where he's just in the scene, but he's not the focal point of the scene.
Right. Because when he's the focal point, it's very easy for us to see, you know, the imperfections, the flaws, just everything that is Carl Winslow. But as a supporting character, I was like, oh, this might be the first full episode where I don't hate Carl in any respect whatsoever. This is a launching pad.
This was Carl's left turn. He's no longer going in a circle. This was his left turn, and he's a lot more likable in this episode.
I thought Judy definitely had a lot more to do in this episode. What did you think about her, like what she did?
Judy stole this episode with one joke. One joke, and I was screaming laughing when she says it. And this was probably the most I've heard her speak in, what, six episodes?
Yeah. I was like, oh my God. Like now, of course, the next thing is we need to have Judy as much of a focal point in an episode as Laura, which I don't even know. I mean, it has to, I mean, she was on the show for 4 years. There has to be at least one episode where she's the focal point. But yeah, I just picked up on it. I was like, wow, okay, Jamie, the writers are giving you a little bit more to do. I like that. And I also feel like with this episode and maybe the last couple, like maybe the writing staff is getting an understanding that Rachel could be a valuable comedic supporting character. Like, have you noticed that there's a quirkiness to Rachel, like lately, that I think Thelma Hopkins plays really well?
Yes, Rachel has definitely got this comedic bug in her that it's her on screen, even when she is not saying anything, she's just funny. You can just look and see her in the scene and like, okay, she's really pulling out the stops for us.
A little gaslighting here, a little bad saxophone playing there. I mean, there's just so many layers to this very out there comedic Rachel. So I'm very interested in to see what the writers do as we carry on with the character of Rachel. So how about we get into it? Let's get into our cold opening. In the kitchen, Eddie and Laura bringing plates of dessert to the kitchen table as Rachel is seated there feeding baby Richie in his baby seat and baby talking to him into taking a bite of his food. And I had a note about Eddie's light blue trackish suit, long sleeve top. I feel like he either wore these colors in the previous episode's cold open, or maybe he just wore this exact top in the Basketball Blues episode. Did this top like have any deja vu to you?
If the colors did. So I feel like he's had these colors on before.
And Laura is wearing a bright blue sweater that I think I found it to be similar in tone to Eddie's blue, unless I'm colorblind. Did you find that as well?
Oh, it was matching. The blues accented each other perfectly.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with Harriet and Eddie with the green in the previous episode's cold open. So I think that might be an intentional thing amongst the design staff.
I think it is, because they're trying to be like, okay, these characters are going to relate. And we notice the characters wearing the same colors typically have the most lines in a scene.
And, you know, as usual, Laura's outfit has like a Cosby sweater outlandishness to it. And as Eddie and Laura head to the table, the camera suddenly pans to the right just a bit. Did you notice this? It suddenly pans to the right just a bit to reveal Judy sitting there. And I felt like the camera guy in charge was just like, oh, shit, right. Yeah, Jamie's in this show.
Yeah, the way the camera panned, it's like, oh, Judy. Like, everybody's kind of jumped. Like, she's here.
Let's give her more to do. Let's give her more to do. She's a part of the show. Okay, all right, let's do it. And as Rachel is trying to convince Richie that his baby food is the best in the world, we get a classic close-up of his baby face, which is clearly telling us, I don't think it's really all that good, mama. Eddie then asks Rachel, reliably dumb, oblivious question we'd expect him to ask, why not give Richie something he likes? Rachel turns back to Eddie and says that Richie just needs to try new things. And I found that kind of amusing because it's like, you know how baby food is. Oh, we're going to switch from carrot mush to mashed potato mush. I don't know if there's that much variety to it.
So as somebody who had to eat baby food when I was 13 years old, because I had braces and my jaw, my lower jaw went numb from these things they had to put in my teeth to create space, I had to eat baby food for a week. And there is a difference in baby food. My favorite was the lasagna.
Okay, so tell me what the difference is. I mean, so it's all mushy. We know that for a fact. But besides that, what is the difference?
There's a little bit of texture in some of them. Most of them are very soft, but the lasagna actually had little noodles in it that provided a little texture and a little carbs. The flavor, it's definitely distinctive. You can taste the difference between, okay, this is supposed to be tomato, this is supposed to be peas or something like that. Now, baby Richie's food, what he was eating, I don't think that would have tasted good no matter what.
I gotta ask, so the choice to eat baby food, like, you couldn't have had, like, KFC mashed potatoes, just any mushy food that adults would normally eat? Like, who was the person that said, hey, gotta eat baby food while I heal for my braces?
I chose the baby food because I don't like KFC mashed potatoes. But I just didn't want to eat anything else. I was like, I don't care. Probably that entire week, I was only awake to eat. And whatever I was going to eat was going to be enough to just fill my stomach so I could take more pain meds and go right back to sleep. And baby food, you can eat it cold or hot. It tastes exactly the same.
Got it. Okay. KFC mashed potatoes was all I was on when I had my wisdom teeth taken out and I was healing. So I just figured, like, oh, everybody in the world eats KFC mashed potatoes to heal their teeth. Oh, yes. All right, Laura asked if this new food would be strained liver with bacon bits, which I was like, geez, Laura, like, yay to the bacon bits. I love bacon, but are you trying to kill Richie's soul with a strained liver? Do you like strained liver, Andrew?
I don't like strained liver, you know, because I am vegan. I'm not touching it, but I looked it up. And strained liver with bacon was a very popular baby food back in the 60s.
Really? So is that all mushy? Is that all mushy or is that like somewhat solid?
Imagine like pot roast or pulled pork, but just very stringy in very small bits of it. And in 1960, it was the second highest selling baby food from Gerber along their line of flavors that they had.
Wow. So Family Matters referencing something in real life that was like, I guess, 20 years old at the time. I did not know that. That is interesting. And then Judy responds with a yuck in a very low energy way. Like, did you pick up on that? It was just like, yuck. Like, it was kind of a toss away line where I thought to myself, you know, she could have added more, like the writer could have added more to that, or she could have not said anything at all. I just wasn't, it's something about that yuck just rubbed me the wrong way.
I feel like she knew that the camera was going to pan past her very fast when she said it. So she's like, just say something. And it worked, but it was kind of rushed when I heard it.
Rachel tells Richie to not listen to Laura and Judy because he'll love the food his mama wants to give him because it tastes so good. And then Rachel makes me laugh as she tries a spoonful of Richie's food to demonstrate because, you know, what her response is going to be, you know, a pretend to like the food. It's so good, Richie. And then she turns away from Richie to give that disgusted face. And Rachel does not hesitate to delete the bullshittery and just says, yuck, forget this stuff. And then that is it. Music plays to wrap up I would find to be a rather quick, okay-ish cold open.
It was pretty quick. There wasn't much substance there. It was just like, okay, we got to do something. Everybody get out here. Give us some baby food and we'll just see if everybody thinks it's cute.
Yeah, it's not on the level of Carl, Laura, and Judy dancing and Carl breaking his back and then the kids were like, ah! Like, yeah, that was better. That was more detailed. But anyway, we get to scene one, exterior night shot of Winslow House, cut to living room where, holy shit, it's just a fucking train wreck with boxes everywhere and they're filled unorganizingly with clothes and various other items. Andrew, like, I'm a fairly disorganized guy, but even I was just looking at this scene here and I was just like, whoa, what is happening? I am so stressed right now.
I saw it and I paused the episode and immediately cleaned my apartment. I took garbage out. I went and did laundry and everything because I was like, I feel like I'm looking at a hoarder's house on television right now.
Oh my God. Kind of the reason why I don't want to watch the show Shameless, I've heard that it gives you that feeling as well. Like the way these characters in Shameless live, like you want to just clean, 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 clean.
Mm-hmm. I can't watch it either because I've heard the same thing. People are like, you would not watch this, Andrew. You would immediately start cleaning your house with Clorox.
Oh my God. All right. So Judy wearing a rather interesting pink button-down shirt with pink suspenders. Did you catch this outfit here?
I did see this outfit and it was more colorful for her than anything else we've ever seen her in. And it was an interesting outfit.
I got it was a very like, oh, hey, I'm a kid and I'm going to perform for you at my dance recital in New York City today. Like, just had a very Broadway flashy kind of quality to it.
It did. It you know, there's a, oh, what is that? Chicago. They're based in Chicago. Oh my God. She was dressed like she was going to perform in Chicago and they're in Chicago.
That's exactly the vibe that I was getting. You know, the top hat, the stockings, the high heels, everything. So Judy just throws a glassy sounding item into a box on the center stage couch like she's Eddie throwing tools on the ground from the body damage episode. Judy just did not give a shit. Mm-hmm. And side note, God, I'm so jealous of Judy's suspenders because I feel like she knows how to put it on. I'm like, when I tried to put it on for a bridal show recently for my job, I had never worn suspenders before. And the men's warehouse, they gave me this tux to wear for this work bridal show. And I looked at these pants and the suspenders like, whoa, this is an alien life figure. What am I going to do here? So what did I do? Instead of strangely ask somebody coming into the restroom, can you ask me out? Like, I literally took my belt from my jeans and just kind of strapped it over my suspender pants. Mind you, there's no belt loopholes. So thankfully there was a suit and vest covering this because otherwise you would think like, oh, wow, is a 2-year-old trying to dress himself but failing miserably?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh at you. Oh my gosh.
I mean, yeah, it's absurd, but you know what? It was 3 hours. I didn't pay for the tux anyway, so whatever. I just got through it.
Hey, you did good. The trick to suspenders, you need to put the front on first and then flip the back of it over your head, and then you can pull it down. Next time you've got a pair, I'll show you.
Okay, so I assume you've had experience wearing suspenders. I thought it was an old people thing.
I love suspenders. I mean, it's definitely an old people thing because I've never seen young people with suspenders, but I love them.
Yeah, I've always imagined myself like, you know, suit, tie, suspenders underneath, hosting a talk show or something. Yeah, I don't know. Larry King must have done something to me when he was alive.
Larry King was the spot. So maybe you're going to channel your inner Larry Spring this year. Larry Spring. Larry King this spring.
Yeah, Larry Spring is Larry King with just fabulous suspenders and great hair. He's a more theatrical version of Larry King.
Yes, he is. And all of the suspenders are floral printed.
I love it. Laura cries out, hey, to Judy's carelessness and tells her to be careful with the merchandise. And looking at this entire living room, I feel like no one cares about anything. So what are you talking about? Be careful.
Yeah, nobody cares. Nothing in there is new. Everybody will be fine.
Judy tells Laura that no one is going to buy this stuff anyway. Laura insists to Judy that someone will because one person's junk is another person's antique. Eddie enters the living room from, I think, where Mama Winslow's bathroom is supposed to be.
I think that's the door he's coming out of. Or now that we know that her room was down there, maybe this is now Mama Winslow's room?
I don't know. That is a question that still has yet to be answered. And Eddie is carrying a rather giant box full of shit that confirms he really is using that bench press from the previous episode. I was like, wow, that looks very heavy. But Eddie just seems to be carrying it effortlessly.
Yeah, with no issues. He's just like, oh, it's here.
But, you know, we reliably get clumsy Eddie because he asks for help with this big box and manages to knock down what I think is a vacuum in the living room in the process while he's walking.
Yeah, he knocks down the vacuum, and I feel like he hit the table, like the little end table that's in between the couch and that blue and wood chair.
I think Darius could have acted a little bit more like he was actually struggling with this box. He just seemed to be like, I'm carrying this box. Oh, okay, I'm clumsy. Like, it just didn't make any sense. Like,
he was clumsy on cue.
Yeah, you're carrying it with ease, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm clumsy. Like, what? Like, learn to act, Darius. Learn to act.
He probably was like, okay, I have to remember to struggle with this. But because he's already a physically built person, he was like, oh, this is nothing. And then reality hit him like, I'm acting and make it look real.
Laura says, sure, as if she's going to help him. But of course, does her mean middle child thing and tells Judy to help Eddie. Judy walks over to the opposite side of the box Eddie is holding. And did Judy notice when she did like sort of an awkward push of the box before helping him carry it?
Yeah, I noticed that she kind of pushed it back at him, which I didn't get why she did that.
I don't know. I guess part of the box was in her way, was about to hit her in the face. It was just an interesting actor's choice, Jamie. Let's just call it that.
Oh, she finessed it. That was the French way of picking up boxes.
I'm too good for this box, but I'll carry it anyway because I'm a good little sister.
Judy knew what she was doing.
As Eddie and Judy are about to put the box down on the floor, Laura tells them, not there, over there, as if they're the stupidest people alive, and points them to the direction of the right spot. Judy cries out that this stuff is heavy. And I'm just looking at Eddie like, dude, like, you seem to carry that box just fine. Don't let poor little Judy try to carry that big thing.
Right. The way Eddie is carrying the box is like head level with Judy. It's like, you could just carry it yourself, Eddie. You don't need help.
Yeah. She's not going to have no view because all the weight is just being pummeled on her. It's insane. So as Eddie and Judy carry the box over to the correct spot, Laura asks what the stuff in the box is. And Eddie says it's grandma's stuff from the basement and you can sell some of it in the garage sale tomorrow. Judy complains to Eddie that they've got to put this box down. And again, going back to the body damage episode, Eddie just plops the box down so carelessly instead of delicately like normal people.
He does. But did you notice everything in the box bounces as soon as he puts it down? Like, there was nothing heavy in that box. So when he drops the box down, everything kind of just bounces very lightly. And it's like, what else is in this box?
Interesting. Bounce like one of those, what do you call those yoga bouncy balls that people sit on in Pornhub? I don't know, like, you know, there's Pornhub yoga videos, right? Where people sit on it and they get nailed.
Okay, I am today's year old and figuring out that there is yoga ball porn on Pornhub.
Yeah, being a straight man is not all as it seems to be, Andrew. Sometimes it's pretty depressing.
Well, you know what? You're into yoga, so that's a hobby.
Watching yoga, like, in a sexual way. Doing it myself, no, I would never do it. But watching other people do it while fucking, great. Give me that all day.
John, I'm taking you to my next yoga class.
Oh, no.
We'll see how you do.
No. I'm a married man. I can't do that.
It'll be goat yoga. It'll just be goats and the yoga. We got this.
Wait. So I'm doing yoga with like actual goat animals? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's pretty fun.
I've never heard of such a concept. Okay. Huh. I've heard of naked yoga as told by Pornhub, but I've never heard of goat yoga.
Goat yoga is imagine yoga with a lot of goat poop.
That is disgusting. Okay. That I might need to think about for a second. Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Laura then instructs Judy to start taking things out of the other boxes and tells Eddie that Judy could use his help. Eddie says he's sorry because he's on a break and proceeds to do the most unconvincing fatigue exhale. Again, Darius needs to work on his acting.
It was not believable at all. I was like, is he taking a deep breath? Like, what is happening here?
I don't know. Laura is not having it and tells Eddie he doesn't see her taking a break. Eddie tells Laura that's because she's not doing any work, which may be true because Laura just seems to be bossing Eddie and Judy around.
Yeah, she hasn't moved a finger. I haven't seen her lift a thing. She stood in that same spot and ordered both of them around.
Go figure, middle child Laura, you. Eddie tells Laura she should try and do some lifting for a change. Laura, with classic Harriet arms crossed sassy pose, tells Eddie she won't do that because she's the brain and he's the brawn. Now, B-R-A-W-N, brawn, a word that I've never heard before. So automatically I had to look into it. Did you already knew what brawn meant?
I knew that it has to do with something being strong or you're the strength, but I don't know the dictionary definition. I've just heard it a lot in my life.
So automatically, before I looked it up on Google, I was like, wait, like brawn like a deer? Brawn like brawny paper towels? So looking into the definition of brawn, it means that you have strong, well-developed muscles. So yes, physical strength as opposed to intelligence. So yes, what you lack in intelligence, you make up for in strength. And I'm thinking that the people at Brawny Paper Towels, they developed the name based on this word here. Because, you know, look at the Brawny Paper Towel guy. Like, he just seems like a strong, white, redneck man. I don't know if he's smart at all, but you look at him and the first thing you think of is like, whoa, this guy can carry 500-pound things and also paper towels, apparently.
Yes, he smokes 12 packs of cigarettes a day. He goes out with his big dog in his truck, but he brings home the paper towel.
There you go. And he combs his mustache finally every day.
He does. And is Brawny still around? Because didn't Bounty have like a weird buff guy for their paper towels as well? And then all of a sudden, one of them disappeared?
I have no clue. Honestly, I cannot tell you the last time that I saw the Brawny paper towel guy anywhere in the grocery store. So you might be right. Eddie tells Laura that the brawn quits. Laura says that's fine because when her garage sale makes enough money to buy that VCR, she's not going to let him use it. And we're clearly in a sign of the times that a VCR was considered an enviable item in 1989. And I think nowadays, what's the equivalent? Like a smartphone or a video game system that kids would love?
Yeah, because I'm thinking a VCR, I had a VCR. And back then, it had to be like $300 to get a VCR. And now I can't even think of getting a DVD player. So it's got to just be smartphones.
Yeah, smartphones, iPads. I think Blu-ray is out of style. So Lord knows what's in nowadays. Eddie says he doesn't need a VCR anyway because he'll read and improve his mind. Yeah, okay, Eddie, you're a very cute guy there. And then after a really quick beat that could have been a little longer to be funnier, Eddie's attention gets switched to the heavy box below and he cries out in excitement. Oh, comics! Judy holds up what looks like either a Hawaiian shirt or a stereotypical dad on vacation shirt and asks Laura if this one old shirt should sell for $1.50. I was like, Jesus, that's either a steal or a really crappy shirt.
It's got to be a crappy shirt from what I saw. But then, you know, I'm packing to go to Mexico. Tell me why I have a shirt that looks almost like that.
Because you are a man that likes to have that tropical vacation dad look. Is it comfortable? Are you just into the coloring of it? Like, what? I mean, I don't know. You tell me.
It's literally just comfortable. TikTok got me. I bought it off the TikTok shop. And I was like, oh, this is a cute little floral print shirt. And it literally looks like a Hawaiian dad vacation shirt.
Before Tony and I went on our honeymoon cruise back in September, I went out of my way to go to TJ Maxx and get like maybe two or three of the most stereotypical looking vacation dad shirts. And I was like, you know what? I got the beer belly. I'm married. I'm settled down. I'm just going to own this. I'm not the young whippersnapper I used to be. I will own the beer belly vacation dad look.
Do it. Own the dad vibe.
Yes. And Laura seems to have the pricing down more correctly when she takes the shirt from Judy and suggests that they sell this as a classic Hawaiian aloha shirt for $7. Yeah, which seems about right because I don't know if, I mean, what... Does even a thrift store have a shirt for $1.50 nowadays? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I can't even imagine. I mean, the dollar store is not even a dollar anymore, so I doubt it.
Laura then asked Judy in a very weird Southern Harriet grandmotherly way, now how much for that old tie? Do you remember that moment?
She channeled her old grandmother in that moment.
Yeah, I felt like that was Kelly just kind of like trying to figure out her character along the way. Like, what are the writers want me to be? A Harriet 2.0? My own thing? Like, that sassy Southern thing, I don't know if we're going to get that later on in the show.
I hope that we do, because it was kind of cute. I was like, this is a cute little moment for Laura.
Judy, I think, seems to be buying into Laura's selling methods and asks if she means this lovely piece of designer neckwear. That's how they're choosing to refer to the tie. Laura is smiling because Judy is getting it. Judy then decides the tie will be $5. And is it just me? Did it look like a very, very purple tie?
It was very purple. It was a deep, deep purple. It looked cute, but I don't know what you would wear that with.
And I don't buy ties. Do tie, like, is a $5 tie a good deal? How much do ties go for?
I don't even know. I think the last time I bought a tie was when I was in my emo phase.
Okay. Like you just had like a black, like good Charlotte tie. Is that what you had?
I remember one of them was like neon green with stripes and it was black and neon green. And I got it from Hot Topic.
Okay. So here's another photo that you need to send me along with the missing photo that you sent me. When you go missing, you have a photo of that. Now I want to get an emo face Andrew photo and we have to post it up on our socials.
I'll find it. I think I have some. Ooh, I'm going to log into my MySpace.
You still have an existing MySpace account?
I never deleted it, so I'm assuming it's still got to be there.
God. Wow. Yeah, I think I went and did away with my MySpace back in like 2004, 2005. And thank God, because the things that I said back then, I would not want on my record today.
Oh my gosh, not my MySpace, those days. If I can log into it, if my account is not deleted, I have all of my emo photos on there, I will send you some.
All right, please do. Laura tells Judy satisfyingly that she's catching on and both of them walk over to Eddie reading comic books. Laura asks Eddie rather aggressively what is so funny from what he's reading as Eddie chuckles quietly and Eddie says this Jughead cracks him up. Laura takes the comic book away from him. Eddie not happily cries out, "Hey!" in response and tries to get the comic book back. But Laura hands it over to Judy and Laura acts as a shield from Eddie getting the comic back as she tells him that is garage sale material. And if he wants to read it for free, he needs to go to the library. Finally, oh my God. Carl and Harriet come down the stairs into the living room. At this moment, I'm realizing this might have been the only moment in the show so far where it's just the three kids. Because like in any other episode, if the kids are involved in a scene, like the adults are usually around. But it was like, wow, Eddie, Laura, and Judy, they're just gaining some shining time just on their own.
They are. This was, okay, I have to say, this is the first episode I really felt like we were watching a family. Because we got the kids in their own scenes. We got the parents in their own like little world with things that are happening. We got baby Richie actually being fed food for once. Like, this is like the things where I'm like, oh, this really feels like a family again.
Baby Richie being fed food instead of being force-fed into saying his first word over and over and over and over again. Yeah, you bring up a good point because I feel like, again, like up until this point, it's been, hey, the world revolves around Carl and what he expects of his children and maybe his job stuff. And now it's like, okay, Carl's getting a moment. Judy, Laura, Eddie's getting a moment. It's wonderful. So yes, I agree with you. A well-rounded episode. So Carl, coming downstairs into the living room with Harriet with his dark blue Police Academy sweater. Harriet has a somewhat close to rhombusy red and black dressy sweater. I had a hard time describing it. Is it somewhat close to rhombusy?
Yeah, kind of like rhombusy. I thought maybe like argyle-ish print, but not fully argyle. Like it was definitely in the geometry spectrum of shapes.
Got it. Andrew, I haven't been to school in like 11 years. So your $75 words like argyle and geometry, they're stressing me the fuck out.
Argyle isn't math. It's just fashion, John. I have argyle socks and they are beautiful.
Wasn't that one of Quasimodo's friends in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the argyle, or is that the gargoyles?
I think gargoyles, but don't quote me because I've actually never seen The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I've only read the story.
Well, that's awful. It is one of the greatest Disney movies from the 90s. Go see it, please.
I will check it out and I will give you a report on it.
All right, I'll hold you to that. Carl holds up what looks to be a pair of socks and happily tells Laura that there's lots of great stuff for her garage sale. Laura looks at Carl's offering and asks confusingly, three pairs of socks? And one pair, you notice, it seemed to be like that classic ugly Oscar the Grouch green socks that you would expect a dad to wear.
Oh, total dad socks. He brought down dad socks. And I don't know who would buy socks from a yard sale. That is too intimate for me.
Right. Because it's use. Yeah, sure, you could put it through the washer, but at the end of the day, it's like, you put those on your feet. I don't know. I'd rather buy it new from the factory. Thank you very much. And then when, you know, of course, Laura says three pairs of socks, Harriet follows up with a great line. Nah, just three socks. And I laughed at that, but I was also confused at that because I was looking at this sock ball that Carl was holding and it looked like there were more than three socks in that.
It looked like it, but then I remember, at least for myself, whenever I see somebody wearing socks or like about to wash their socks and they ball them up, you think it's more than one sock, but then it's just one sock.
All right. Laura tells her parents that she's trying to buy a VCR and asks if all they can really donate is three socks. She stresses that one of them has a hole in it while holding up that very sock. Harriet tells Laura that her father won't part with anything. And immediately I relate to Carl because I mean, I'm not even a dad yet. And I already have those hoarder tendencies that Tony, my wife, puts up with very patiently.
John, there's something about holding on to things and it's just I mean, look behind me. I have all this crap collectibles that I just hoard and refuse to get rid of.
Okay, so I like your balance. You are a person that loves organization, cleanliness, but at the same time, if you have a house full of collections to the point where it's hard to move stuff around, I mean, hey, that's you. You know what I mean? You like to collect things.
Yeah, it's just like something where I'm like, I like to collect it, but I'm also that person where I will hold on to something. I just threw away clothes. I had a t-shirt from high school that I have not gotten rid of. And I graduated 17 years ago. And I'm like, okay, Andrew, you got to let this go. Get rid of it.
Oh my God. This brings me back to when my mom helped me move into my college dorm. There was a red, torn up, holy Niagara Falls t-shirt that I loved wearing since, I don't know, maybe elementary school or whatever. And I just barely grew. So in college, it still fit me. And, you know, I'm going through my college experience. And one day I notice, wait a minute, where's my red shirt? Where's my red shirt? It turns out during the moving in process, my mom just secretly threw it in the trash without telling me.
Oh, she sneakily got rid of it. She knew that the hoard was starting.
And that's why I'm on my own, because I can throw things out my way. And maybe sometimes my wife will act as my mother and throw things out without my permission. But still, I mostly do things my way. Carl says that that is not true, but takes a quicker but better beat than Eddie with the comics line and quickly notices his tennis racket in one of the boxes and insists to Laura that she cannot sell this. Laura tells Carl that mom said we could. Carl refuses to hear it because he might take up tennis again. And, Carl is having a solo playing catch moment with the racket while also pretending like he's getting ready for a tennis serve. Harriet tells Carl that he used that tennis racket once in his life, and that was to kill a cockroach. Automatically, I was hoping that that racket was cleaned after the cockroach was squished, because cockroaches are big.
They are and messy. I cringed when they said that. I'm like, oh, I hope there's no roach left on that thing.
Carl looks further into the boxes and is stunned to see his old catcher's mitt in there that he also doesn't want to be sold. Carl wears the glove and privately says it was his first glove. Okay, yeah. So he privately says it was his first glove as he pounds his fist into it like he's ready to play ball. Carl then coughs from the dustiness coming from that catcher's glove that he's punching. That looked like some kind of like 1930s asbestos that he was going to get killed by.
It really did. It was a thick cloud.
Harriet tells Laura that Carl's glove clearly still has the original dirt in it. And then Rachel randomly is in the living room out of nowhere to greet the Winslows with her old saxophone that she found in the basement. And I'm like, Jesus, of course. Rachel, a car mechanic, a writer, a gourmet cook. Now we're going to find out she's a talented saxophone player.
I'm just trying to figure out, why was her old saxophone in the basement? When Rachel moved in, she just bring all of her junk with her?
I guess, yeah. Like my mom with the way she sneaked my shirt into the trash, I guess Rachel just sneaked her saxophone into the house when she moved in. And there you go. Big surprise. You know, everybody's going to get the wrath of Rachel's saxophone screeching. And oh, did you notice Rachel's outfit? I was like, oh my God, like we have like a flowery overall and bright white button down. I was just getting very Southern hospitality maid vibes with her dress.
Oh, I can see that. It gave me kind of like modest church girl, but still fun is what I was getting from it. But I can definitely agree with you.
Yeah, either way, there was like this sort of bright innocence to that outfit. So I found it very interesting, especially when she's called Hot Lips later on. I thought that was a very nice contrast.
I didn't even think about that. That is a really good contrast.
Laura tells Rachel the saxophone is great because they can get a lot of money for that. Rachel insists she's not selling it because she used to play a pretty mean sax. Harriet tells Rachel that she doesn't think mean describes it. Painful, maybe. Rachel doesn't buy that and tells Harriet she would listen to her practice when they were kids. As Rachel puts her mouth on the sax, already, Andrew, I'm just afraid of the sound that's going to come out.
I could tell by how she put her mouth on the mouthpiece and the fact that she didn't wet the reed. I knew. I'm like, this is not going to sound good.
And again, another word that I was introduced to. I was like, I don't know things about how a saxophone works. A reed? What is reed? Read a book? Like, what the hell is that?
So the reed, it's a thin piece of wood. Almost like take your finger. And this is about the width of a reed. Some of them are a little bigger, depending on your mouthpiece. But it vibrates when you blow through the mouthpiece. And that's what helps make the instrument make sound.
So if you play your the saxophone on your lips for a long amount of time, I would imagine that vibration, doesn't that produce a very numbing feeling after a while?
No, I play clarinet and saxophone and bass clarinet, and they all used reeds. And you don't really feel the vibration on your lips. Your lips kind of stop the vibration. The mouthpiece is about a quarter way in your mouth. And the vibration happens more near your tongue. And in that space between your teeth and your tongue is kind of where the mouthpiece sits. So you don't really feel the vibration until you put your tongue on it.
Interesting. By the way, you are a total band geek between the clarinet and the saxophone. Is that what you said?
Clarinet, saxophone, and flute were all my band instruments I played.
There you go, man. I love that. Harriet does suddenly remember hearing Racial Practice as kids. And then after a perfect beat, insists that she's out of here. And actually does exit to the kitchen. Rachel tells Laura to not listen to Harriet because she was good. And then Rachel proceeds to play a not surprisingly awful, screechy, puberty voice cracking saxophone note that did not compliment my hearing at all. For a moment, I was just like, oh, okay. Whoa. I'm trying to maintain my hearing here, Rachel. Hello.
You know that sound? This is how I know I'm a band geek. It was awkwardly soothing to me. I was like, oh, the sound of somebody who can't play an instrument. I know what that is.
So that wouldn't be stressful to a established band geek member like you? Like, that's there's something about that that's soothing? How is that possible?
Because it's like, oh, this is cute. This is somebody trying to play an instrument who either doesn't remember or doesn't know how to play it. And so it's kind of exciting where it's like, ooh, they're going to sound really bad in the beginning. But once they get it, they're going to sound good.
Smooth jazz from Kenny G on the soprano sax, that's soothing. But Rachel, she makes me want to just take a hostage and pee on them for some reason.
Don't pee on the hostages. No golden showers from saxophones.
But damn it, I drank a lot of water, Andrew. I have to go. Anywho, after that note, Rachel privately and clearly obliviously says that she still got it. After a bit of audience laughter, Carl tells Rachel, whatever she's got, they don't want. But you want it. You want it because it puts you to sleep, Andrew.
It won't put me to sleep, but it's like, oh, this is cute. It's like looking at a baby take their first steps. Because it's hard enough to even make a sound out of one of those instruments. So if the sound is bad, I congratulate you. You did something.
A baby taking their first step on the top of like a flight of stairs and then just falling down to their death. That's what I would describe Rachel's saxophone screeching. Just my opinion. Just my opinion.
This is why I know you did not like Rugrats, John.
And I'm going to be a father. That's very not now, but I want to be in the future. So that's very concerning.
Don't worry. You're going to baby-proof the hell out that house. So the baby will be good.
All right. I hope so. Mama Winslow enters from where I think her bathroom is supposed to be. As Rachel says, she needs a new reed because her lips are soft, but it will all come back because playing the sax is like riding a bicycle. And then Rachel plays another hilariously awful note as she exits up the stairs. And you already defined the word reed. So thank you so much. I appreciate that. As a finely grandmotherly dressed Mother Winslow walks towards the living room front door with the things she's carrying, she has a great line in response to Rachel. Sounds like riding a bicycle over a cat. And the audience really laughed at that, which is well-deserved.
They did. It was a good little line that she hit us with.
We then hear a horn from outside honking, and Mama Winslow says, there's her ride. Carl asks his mama where she's going, and she says her and a bunch of girlfriends are having a slumber party over at Carlotta's house. And it was interesting to me, Andrew, because I don't normally think of old ladies as having slumber parties too often. But at the same time, I was just like envious of Mother Winslow for having that kind of retirement social life. Don't you become jealous of retirement people sometimes? Because sometimes I'll be walking by in a neighborhood and I'll see an old person who seems retired just sitting on their porch on a nice spring day. And they're just looking at people passing by. And I'm like, what a life. You've worked your ass off all this life. And now you just get to sit back on a porch chair, randomly go on a cruise with your girlfriends or boyfriends or whoever, and just enjoy.
It's the best. I love when I'm on vacation and I meet like an older couple that's retired, or even just individuals who are retired, and they're like, oh, just go have another beer. It doesn't matter. You're on vacation. Meanwhile, I'm like, I shouldn't drink too much. This is just so much. And I have to do all these different things and I have to save money. And they're just like, honey, live your life. The money will come. They're so relaxed. And I want to be that. I'm going to be that. I will be the old biddy on the cruise with the friends.
Yeah, and I think it would be especially great, like, for people like myself who want kids someday. You know, you get to the point where your kids have kids, and your kids may think, like, oh, hey, you know, mom and dad probably want to watch the grandkids. And you know, I'm going to be the first one to be like, nope, the wife and I, we got a trip to Greece. You take care of them on your own.
There you go. Parents are not babysitters, okay? I'm sorry, grandparents are not babysitters.
Yeah, it's very easy to do that while the parents have a night out. And they deserve a night out, but, you know, grandparents have lives too.
Mm-hmm. They matter. Let these old people go out and have a beer and just relax or go to a slumber party. I can't imagine a 60-year-old slumber party or older. It has to be a fun time.
I think the best description, I think, of old people, freedom and liberation is I was listening to Dick Van Dyke's audiobook. Dick Van Dyke, of course, from Mary Poppins, Dick Van Dyke Show, just a legend. And, you know, the guy, like, his diet, you know, you would think that he's like fucking still like 20 or 30 or whatever. Like, he's talking about, like, oh, I love cookies, I love ice cream, blah, blah, blah. And I go to my doctor and I tell my doctor, like, oh, doctor, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm pushing 90. Should I be eating all this sugar? And the doctor, even the doctor just said, Dick, you're almost 90. Go enjoy your life. You're fine.
Yes. Look, I am with that. That's great advice, because once I hit 90, I'm doing whatever I want to do. I'm not hesitating at all.
Yeah, as you shouldn't, as you should not. All right, Eddie asks Mama Winslow in his dumb, confused way if they're really having a slumber party with sleeping bags. And Mama Winslow says the girlfriends and she like to sack out on the floor with the windows open and pretend they're camping. There's that sack out phrase again. I think we had heard that sacked out phrase before and we were just like, what? Is that what people say?
I still have never heard anybody say, I'm going to go sack out. That just really sounds like you're about to go free balling.
Yeah, that's right up there with the pump. I'm going to pump myself up, like with Steve Urkel and Eddie from the previous episode's Cold Open. And mm-hmm. Then we see Laura, Judy, and Eddie smiling at Mama Winslow because they rightfully think that, you know, that sounds like a good fucking time, this old lady slumber party. As Mother Winslow says goodbye to everybody, Laura tells her to wait because she wasn't told what she could sell. Mama Winslow tells Laura she can sell everything in that box below with the exception of the quilt on top. Laura holds up a plastic wrapped quilt that it looked like it had never been opened, and asks Mama Winslow if this is what she means. Mama Winslow confirms it is, and again gives Laura permission to sell everything else. Laura thanks her grandma. Mama Winslow tells Laura, you're welcome, and proudly states that it's time to be out with the old and in with the new. Horn honks again from outside, and Carl offers to help his mama with the things she's carrying out the door. Mama Winslow thanks her not-so-favorite son for the kind gesture as they both exit through the door. Don't worry. I mean, she'll love him more as time goes by.
The love will grow. The love will grow, and eventually they'll be fine. I do have one question about the scene, if it came up in your head, John. If the quilt was not meant to be sold, why was it left in that box? That just thrown me. Like, I'm like, if you're not supposed to sell that, Mama Winslow, why wouldn't you just take it out of the box?
That is a very, very valid question. Also, based on what we know about the quilt later on, I don't know, the plastic wrappedness of it, I just felt like, oh, it has it ever been touched? I don't know. It seemed like a very well-condomed quilt.
It really did. Did you say condomed quilt?
I did. I did.
It was very protected.
Yeah. That quilt is not going to be making babies anytime soon. Good for them. No syphilis for you.
It's 99.9% effective.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Laura satisfyingly tells Eddie and Judy that Grandma is a cooperative person whom they should take a lesson from, and insists that they make this garage sale a huge success. Eddie and Judy audibly agree, and Eddie compliments his agreement by suggesting that all three of them gotta give until it hurts. Eddie looks through one of the boxes on the center couch for a second and takes out a camera that he tells Laura she cannot sell. Laura tells Eddie to watch her do just that. Judy cries out in unhappy astonishment, my Barbie doll! As another thing in these boxes that isn't in complete agreement to be sold, Laura demands to Judy and Eddie that all this box stuff is tagged and they better put things back or pay up. And, you know, here we are. We have a bossy middle child who I think did not consult with her siblings beforehand about the things they do and don't want to keep. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Laura was the one that just put the quilt in the box, assuming that it had to be sold, and So I think Laura might have been acting on all this on her own. And then after the fact, when everything is already in the boxes, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute, Laura. I don't want to sell this. I don't want to sell that.
If that's what I think happened. I feel like Laura went into everybody's room, took things out, and was just like, oh, I'm doing a yard sale, and did not actually confirm with anybody what was okay to sell. Except for grandma.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's just so very narrow, selfish. Like, I got to make some money because I'm Laura Lee Winslow, motherfucker.
It was her gambit. She was out here and she's like, I'm standing on business. I am going to get this money for this VCR because we need to watch E.T.
Exactly. I think at the time, 7-year-old E.T. We've got to have it.
The movie was probably still $3,000 to buy on VHS at that point.
I'm sure. Judy says, no way, and exits up the stairs in defiance with her Barbie doll. Eddie pleads his case with Laura that he needs a camera because he's been looking for a way to express himself. Laura follows up with a burn that you would expect from Laura. Yeah, English sure hasn't been working. Eddie shoos Laura's insult away as he exits through the swinging kitchen door. Carl re-enters the living room through the front door after seeing Mama Winslow off to another one of her social gatherings. Laura tells her dad that Eddie and Judy don't understand the concept of a garage sale because you need inventory. Carl agrees with Laura and says he'll talk to the other two, but just as he's about to exit, he notices his old bell-bottom pants that he clearly doesn't want to give away either. And then, do you remember as Carl was like stretching out the pants and trying to size them up on his legs, there was a woman in the audience that was just howling with laughter. She really loved that moment.
She loved it. I heard that and I was like, what is that? And I had to turn it up and listen. I'm like, that's a woman just laughing, solo laughing. Nobody else was laughing. And she loved that moment.
Yeah, she either had a drink before the show or she remembers the bell-bottom pants era and was just like, aha, I remember the 70s and how whack that fashion was.
I bet you she had a pair of bell-bottoms on when they were recording.
After the laughter dies down, Carl says he wore these pants to Woodstock, which is very strange because I automatically thought back to like the cold open from the previous episode where Carl was listening to that generic saxophone hold music on the boombox and he claims that this is the cool music of the 60s. But if you remember from the Woodstock Music Festival, no, this is the 60s rock from Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin that we remember so much. So that kind of contrast was very interesting to me.
I can see it being interesting contrast. I feel like Carl was there as security or like crowd control, I mean, which wasn't successful at Woodstock, but he was like there in a working capacity. I can see him jamming to that music.
Well, actually, I think we have a reveal here that might change that theory. Laura appropriately asked her dad in disbelief if he really went to Woodstock, and Carl clarifies he actually just saw the concert movie and then he just goofily holds up the peace sign with his fingers. Now, have you seen the Woodstock concert movie? Because it is an interesting watch.
I've watched it probably about 6 or 7 times. I love Woodstock. I always thought if I was alive, I would have loved to have gone because that seemed like my kind of vibe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you and I were not alive to see the real thing in person. So the only thing we could see is the concert film. And I remember seeing it on my portable DVD player back in high school and just thinking like, huh, what a historical experience for this country.
Yeah, it was the one time a gathering of people got together and nobody was, never mind, because I was going to tell a lie. Not everybody made it home from Woodstock, but they had a great time.
And then music plays to end what I'd say is a fairly lengthy first scene. We go to scene 2, gray sky, rainy exterior shot of the Winslow house. And I'm thinking like, whoa, is a garage sale happening today? They're really making it clear that it's rainy as fucking hell.
Right. It was so interesting to see the rain superimposed over the house. I'm like, huh, I wonder they just did not want to wait for an actual rainy day so it looked better. But it was an interesting way that they put it through.
It almost looked like an art drawing, like some kind of CGI art painting, the way the rain was just draping over the house like that.
It did. And all the raindrops kind of had the same similar shape when they were coming down. So I'm like, this just had to be hand-drawn.
Then we cut to the living room where we see Harriet coming down the stairs and an appropriately, for once, an appropriately casual button down, like the casual button down that you would literally imagine any mom wearing, like when she's like, all right, here we go, time to do some spring cleaning around the house.
Immediately I thought of Dexter's mom from Dexter's Lab. Immediately when I saw her.
That is a Cartoon Network reference I have not heard in quite some time. Look at you with that deep dive.
I love me some cartoons.
And Harriet asks Laura, what's all the stuff doing down back in the living room? Laura, who I think she's wearing that same like sort of Jamaican multicolored sweater thing that she was wearing from the cold open with Urkel and the newspapers dropping.
Yes, we've had the sweater 3 episodes. 3 episodes we've had the same sweater.
And it's just a big contrast to what we see Laura wearing later on as she grows up in the series. Her fashion choices, there's something.
There's something. And by the way, her sweater in the previous scene, when she had that blue and black sweater on, it took me the longest time to find that image. It's an alchemy image that she has on that sweater. It looks like a Cosby-ish sweater, but it's referencing as above, so below, I think is what the statement that was on the website. And it took me a minute to look at that sweater and get it because it's the same image, that little weird guy that's in the black and blue flipped up upside down. And it's from Alchemy.
Is that an anime? Because I noticed that, like, who's that like weird boxed robot looking character on the front of the sweater? Is that an anime? Alchemy?
I don't know if that's an anime character, but alchemy was a form of science that was proven to be fake because apparently you can turn things into other things with magic. It's not how science works. But alchemy is all about the opposite side of energy. And that's what that sweater is referencing.
Okay. Yeah. Because I noticed that Laura was going on with this similar pattern. So to now hear that there's an identification to it and it's in fact alchemy. Okay. I like that. I like that we verified that. That's great. So Laura tells her mom it's raining, so where else could she put the stuff that's down back in the living room? Harriet suggests the stuff should go back in the garage since it's a garage sale. Laura tells her mom she's got to understand something about retail because the garage is cold and damp and people will spend more money in the living room. Harriet asks Laura how much she's made so far. Laura says it's only been 3 hours. Harriet asks again how much has been made. Laura continues to avoid answering the question and says the weather is against her. Harriet again asks how much. It's just that classic child parent play, like, oh, I kind of dropped something on the floor. How much fluid did you drop in the fucking casserole, Timmy?
Like, what did you break? How much? We need to know now.
Just remember that I love you. How much is it going to cost us, Timmy? Come on, just give me the lowdown.
As soon as somebody says, I love you, you know it was expensive. You know whatever was broken is a lot.
By the way, when I told my mom that she could not invite her 25 relatives to my wedding, I literally started off with, hey, mommy, I love you. You're the best.
Goodness gracious, so much to unpack with this quilt episode. And that's just part one. Join us for part two.